Welcome to the annual budget hearings for the City and County of Denver's next fiscal year. This session of the annual budget hearings begins now.
Okay, you all, good morning. Welcome. We'll go ahead and get started. Does the mayor's office want to say anything before we get started?
No.
No? Good. All right, so then I'll kick it over to Adib so we can get into the presentation. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Really excited to be presenting today our work and our team and plans that we have for 2025. We have some exciting things to share with you all. And we have an opportunity to really make some, I think, some key investments in our future for our economy in Denver. Dito, I'm going to give you a little bit of an agency overview. I'll speak specifically about our 2025 priorities that you'll see reflected in the budget. We'll speak about how those align with the citywide priorities as well as city council priorities, and then go into depth on some of the kind of key highlights by division. And then we'll have an opportunity to dive deeper through questions. And really, most importantly, I want to speak to how Dito strives to be a driving force that advances equitable economic prosperity for the City County of Denver, our businesses, our neighborhoods, and residents. And so in terms of the agency and how we operate, I really want to kind of touch on our five divisions. So obviously we have our Workforce Development Group, which really focuses on connecting employers with our talent, really developing talent within the community, connecting our job seekers to employment. Tony Anderson, who's here, represents and leads our Workforce Division as our Chief Workforce Officer. Next, I want to highlight our big division, which is led by Deborah Cameron, our Business Innovation and Global Development team, which really focuses on championing business recruitment, retention, and expansion across our city. It also ensures that as Denver, we are creating a global city here, and we have a lot of work surrounding that. We have our NEST division, which is led by Seneca Holmes, who's here as well. Seneca and his team really focused on a place-based focus for economic growth and development. So we have our NEST neighborhoods, which I think you're all familiar with, and how we really develop and dive into that work. And then DISBO, which Brittany is our leader of DISBO here today, and she focuses that team's work on our compliance function and creating opportunities to expand contract opportunities for our small minority and women-owned businesses. And then we have our executive office, which really focuses on our operational efficiency, overall management, as well as a number of other functions. And so we worked through those five divisions. Here's really a generic overview of our structure. I wanted to give you guys an opportunity not to look at the entirety of our org chart, but just to kind of see how the divisions are laid out, and each one of those led by the folks that I introduced here earlier. And then I want to dive in a little bit of our priorities. The mission of DITO is to create an economy that works for everyone. The way I see that operationalized is that our economy does work for some, and I think we realize that. Many of us here benefit from a great economy here in Denver, but it doesn't work for many people. And so all of our programs, our services, our offerings are really designed with that in mind. How do we ensure that we are building the pipelines and programs that are necessary to help folks who are not benefiting from our economic growth, that are not benefiting from our economy, to be able to achieve sustainability and to be able to thrive here in Denver? And as we look at our highlights for 2025 and the areas we want to focus, one of which is going to be the continued focus on strengthening our workforce and our local economy, ensuring that we have the workforce that's meeting the job demands of today and tomorrow, and ensuring that we're investing in developing businesses here in Denver, as well as recruiting businesses from around the nation and the globe to come to Denver and being the best city in the world, in the country, to be able to do business. We also focus, again, with a priority on small businesses. Small businesses are really the backbone of our community and our economy, and we have a focus also with our specific neighborhoods that are under-resourced and historically underserved. And that's where our DISBO work comes in, as well as our NEST work. In addition to that, we look at our youth programming. The mayor has really issued us to have a focus on our youth and be able to create safe places for them to thrive. And one of the great ways that we can achieve that goal is by offering employment opportunities and pathways into employment. And so we'll be speaking a little bit more in depth about our youth programming. And then downtown. We've talked a lot about downtown and 16th Street. 16th Street is the spine of our downtown. The downtown is the center of our city, which is the economic hub of our region. And so the focus on downtown is more critical now than ever, as our downtown is facing an economic downturn. And so putting more effort, time, and attention towards the revitalization of downtown is a key step for us. And in terms of how we focus on this work broadly, we are always looking to invest and support in small businesses. We're always looking to develop that skilled and talented workforce. We look to gear our programs around job seekers and their needs. We provide wealth building opportunities. We prioritize those under-resourced populations and communities. We also are a representation of our business sector's voice and the viewpoints that they have on how we can improve our city. We look to enhance our city's business-friendly climate, understand economic trends, and support placemaking. And so as we look at the citywide priorities, I think you guys know these headers in terms of what the mayor's priorities are, what we've identified as agency heads as the key areas, which is really around vibrancy, affordability, safe, and great government. And so when we talk about vibrancy, it's really about, one, we look at downtown. That's a key indicator of how vibrant Denver is. I hear too often folks who come to visit Denver and they say downtown's kind of a mess right now. And when they leave the city, they don't have the best impression of what Denver's all about. We need to work on that. We need to make our downtown really a hallmark and a staple for what the Denver experience is. We also need to continue to support small businesses, their development, growth, and retention. Again, build on our status as a global city. One of our greatest assets for the entire region is our airport, and so making sure that we're utilizing that asset to the fullest, and also our connections internationally, which we have 31 now global connections through our airport, and also influencing the creation and retention of thousands of jobs. From an affordability standpoint, we want to be able to look at living wage jobs. I think one of the great pieces of news that came out recently was a report by ADP that showcased that Denver had a 5.8% wage increase, median wage increase, which was the highest of any major city in the country. We also had more available jobs for folks who are looking for a living wage. We want to make sure that we're getting pathways into those jobs and continue to support the growth of those jobs. Mentorship and growth opportunities for our certified businesses. Our wealth building strategies and trying to expand those within our NEST neighborhoods. And we are also focused now on ensuring that we're investing in child care in partnership with the Office of Social Affairs. On the safety side, when we talk about our priority populations, making sure that our workforce programs are aligned with populations who can benefit the most from that work, especially some of those who have been justice involved, who can have pathways into a self-sustainable lifestyle. In addition to that, focusing on our NEST neighborhoods and where we can offer better opportunities there. And then, as I spoke to earlier, youth workforce as a key way of providing positive outlets for youth and great ways to spend their time. And then on the great government side, we're looking at a number of ways in which we can increase efficiencies in how you do business with the city, partnerships with CPD, partnerships with Dottie. We're working right now. We just had a meeting this morning talking about how do we do a better job of listening to our customers in the community, understanding where some of those pain points are, understanding best practices from other cities, and being able to incorporate those in how we do business here in Denver. And then also making sure that we do a better job of service delivery. When we look at our NEST neighborhoods, oftentimes we have multiple departments working in those neighborhoods and they're not always coordinated. And so Seneca and his team are looking at ways in which we can do that in a much better way, more efficiently, with community in mind, and being able to coordinate those services in an aligned fashion. Here are some of the areas. There's even more than this when you guys look at the City Council priorities in terms of our alignment. I'm not gonna spend too much time on this, but these are kind of four of the key areas that we highlighted. In terms of how we look at the priorities that were identified by City Council, and then we look at the programs. And as we talk about community safety and that key piece of neighborhood work, just highlighting a little bit of the work that we do in the NEST division around that, as we look at our citywide businesses and how we're creating them and our labor infrastructure, we obviously have a lot in terms of our workforce and business development that applies here, empowering our communities and improving customer service. Again, that goes to that great government piece. And investing in Denver's children and youth. Both on the child care front and on the youth workforce side, we'll see a lot of work out of DITO that really aligns to that. And just kind of continuing that conversation, we really prioritize equity in our work. So when we talk about an economy that works for everyone, we think about that with every program that we're developing. We think about that in terms of who we're actually hitting with our programs themselves. And so, you know, obviously business development can affect a lot of folks. a workforce program can be targeted at a number of different populations, but what really drives us is how we point those needles towards the center, which is those who don't really benefit from our economy. And it manifests itself in a number of ways. One, the priority of our work on small businesses. When you look at workforce development, for example, and Tony's team and the work that they do, for next year, we're stressing and putting more resources towards our priority populations. And you'll hear that as a theme as we talk about our workforce services. When we speak about priority populations, we're talking about youth, justice involved, our newcomers, our unhoused, our older workers, individuals with disabilities, and individuals who are public assistance recipients. These are the folks that we direct the majority of our programs towards and the majority of our resources towards affecting. And you'll see this kind of throughout our workforce division. On top of that, we look at inclusive economic growth. We look at wealth building strategies like the creation and sustainability of co-ops and ESOPs. We want to work with community and do community-led planning. Our NEST division is building more resources about how we can be responsive and create more active engagement and listening to those communities and building programs around their perspectives and what ultimately is going to make the most impact from the community itself. And then looking at downtown revitalization with an equity lens and how we are assuring that downtown is a place for everyone. We're not just thinking about downtown as a place for those businesses and those residents who live in, work in downtown. We're thinking about downtown as a regional asset that everybody benefits from as we move forward. In terms of the composition by fund, you can see here that a majority of our funding comes from outside sources, from grants. I'm really proud of the work that our team does in actively being a source of managing things like federal funds. Federal funds, as you guys all know, they're very challenging to manage and report on and continue to kind of recruit. But our team, especially, I want to give a shout out to Tony and his workforce team, the way we handle our CDBG money out of our NEST division. A lot of those dollars are complicated, but we've been doing a very good job with a number of areas in terms of management of those funds and also recruiting more funds. I'm happy to announce that just yesterday, Tony and his team were able to bring in another $5 million grant for our TechP program. That will extend that program for the next 5 years, which is great news, and it just speaks to how we're consistently looking at new ways to bring in outside sources of funding to maximize the impact of our work. So now I'll touch a little bit on each of the divisions and the work that's happening and how it pertains our focus areas for 2025. I'll start out with our largest group, which is our Workforce Development Division. And really, I think the key is that we offer our services at no cost. We have a number of programs that exist out there for job seekers. We have also a number of contracted partners that we work with to deliver services in a way that's, I think, more aligned with the needs of that particular community. And we create that pipeline into many of the jobs that are really needed for today and the future. And as we look at what our focus areas are for 2025, one is continued resources. We have some very successful programs. We need to continue to maintain funding for those programs, which includes not only bringing in those federal dollars, but working in partnership with other funding sources. I come from the philanthropic sector. We had a workforce initiative in that place. I know many of the other funders around the region who have a focus on workforce. We want to work in better partnership with those funders to bring in additional dollars to continue the work that we have been doing that's been successful. On top of that, one of our focus areas for 2025 is really going to be on youth workforce. We had a very positive summer with our youth works program and the mayor's promotion of a lot of our workforce initiatives across DPS, and we're able to serve a record number of youth through our summer programming this last year. We're hoping to increase that even more. Tony's talked about doubling that goal of the number of students that we can serve over the summer. In addition to that, we want to build out programs that we have that connect youth to apprenticeships, and also continue to build out programming that's more year-round and sustainable for our youth. And then enhance services for priority populations. I mentioned the definition of how we look at priority populations. Tony's hired dedicated staff this year for the first time that's focused on our priority populations, that can represent some of those communities, and also ensure that all of our programs are aligned with the goals that we have that are really driven by equity. In terms of how we're looking at it, we are seeing a shrinking labor force here in Denver. We have a softening economy. These are areas that are a reality of everybody's budget and the numbers that we're seeing across our economy. So we're expecting about a 1.5% year over year from 2024 to 2025 gain. You can see that reflected here. The blue bar graphs in here really represent the entirety of the workforce, and that red line represents the number of folks that our workforce division serves. And so we do expect to, as we look at the unemployment numbers have been rising over this last 6 months. Denver typically has been below the United States national numbers when it comes to unemployment. We've seen that switch in about the middle of this year, where we have about a 4.5% unemployment rate in Denver. And so that's a concern. That's something that we need to monitor, we need to address. But the good news is that we have programs and services and a good labor market right now, so we just need to make sure that we're catching folks, as Tony and his team do. Whenever there's an announcement of a layoff or potential closing of a business, his team's out there first responding to those individuals, getting them connected to our workforce centers, and ensuring that they have a pipeline to gainful employment. But I also want to stress, we do still have a great labor market, as that ADP study showed. Not only is it the starting wages and the pay growth, but also the hiring rate. We have one of the highest hiring rates of any city in the country. A little bit more on the youth side of things. So not only do we have the mayor's program, we also have our dedicated youth services team that works with a number of partners, not only across Denver, but across the region. We have our governor's summer job hunt, our certified youth employer program, and Denver youth employment program. Our youth works initiative, which I touched on a little bit earlier with the collaboration of OCA and the mayor's office, really offers that incentive for young people to work the minimum number of hours over the summer, which is a great way to get folks involved. We have 6 contracted partners specifically focused on youth that we're hoping to invest in this next year. And in addition to that, I think a lot of you are familiar with our Denver Construction Careers Program, which is really to design that funnel of folks into the construction opportunities through city construction projects. And we have funds specifically focused with youth in mind on that talent development effort with Denver Public Schools. With our business development, innovation, and global engagement, this is really kind of what we think of traditional economic development areas. And when we look at our 2025 priorities, our focus one is on downtown economic revitalization. That's an area where we're spending a lot of work currently. We'll continue to do that work into next year. It also goes into citywide, obviously, work that we're doing around business and economic growth. Business retention is a key strategy. We're having meetings on a weekly basis, Deborah and her team, talking to businesses, asking what's going to keep them here in Denver, having those discussions, understanding the reality that we're seeing with folks. I think, you know, in the last few years before I came to the city, we saw a record number of businesses that left the city and county of Denver. We want to make sure that we're putting a priority and focus on keeping those businesses here in Denver. Fostering startup incubations, as well as supporting startup and scaling businesses. We have a number of partners right now that we're engaging with around some startup opportunities, around our plug-and-play programs, an opportunity to fund a plug-and-play initiative here in Denver, a lot of other opportunities that are currently in the works around that area. Business development as a whole, you can see on the blue graph, really we're focused on our job development, jobs that are influenced specifically by DITO. So whenever we're recruiting a company, whenever we're offering a business incentive fund, those are specifically aligned to jobs created here in Denver. So we do see a little bit of a reduction in that due to the soft economy in 2025. These are conservative estimates regarding the number of jobs that we can influence. What we saw, this blip in 2022, was really around the Pepsi plant and the number of jobs that were created from that specific investment. And then one of the areas that we'll focus on, amongst many others, with our big, and again, I'm just kind of highlighting one piece for each of our divisions, is the work that we're doing downtown. The mayor's really led us on pushing what we can achieve downtown. This includes a focus on 16th Street retail, recruitment, retention, activation. I had a call with a couple of business leaders this morning to speak to, as 16th Street goes, the rest of our economy goes. And that's the belief of many of the folks in our city, and I think there's good justification for that. It may not be everything, but it is truly important for our economy and the perceptions of our city. And so that work will continue as we have about 30% of our 16th Street retailers currently vacant. So we need to make sure that we're filling those, especially as we look at the opening of 16th Street Mall. Our office retention and recruitment, as I spoke to earlier, the activations and opening around 16th Street, bringing more people into our center city, which is a key economic driver for our region. We're looking at ways in which we can, you probably heard from CPD and some of their plans around improving our permitting process. They're doing a great job, and we're going to continue to improve that and find ways to do some pilot projects of express permitting downtown, and also looking at working with CPD in collaboration for our downtown area plan. If we look at NEST and the work that we have for this next year, NEST is obviously really focused on mitigating the amount of involuntary displacement. It's about reducing the effects of gentrification. And Seneca and his team really work closely in community to help us achieve those goals. As we're looking towards our budget book, you will not see, there's a lot of the funding for the NEST programs comes through the CDBG block grant funding. And that's where we're able to make a lot of those investments. And a lot of the areas that you can use CDBG funding for specifically are applicable to our NEST neighborhood, that they're low and moderate income areas and other qualifications. A couple of the priorities that we have for 2025 is our collective impact model. We're really trying to bring in more people. It shouldn't just be the city working to improve some of our NEST communities. We want to work with our business community, our philanthropic community, our nonprofit community in a more coordinated fashion around shared goals about what we can achieve in those neighborhoods. And I'm really excited about some of the work that's going to come out of that, as well as every 5 years, NEST is required as part of that federal funding, that CDBG funding, to complete a consolidated plan. That's currently in its final stages, but we will tweak our programming and align our programming with the updated consolidated plan, which will really guide our work over the next 5 years. You will see a decrease in some of the impact outcomes and metrics for this next year. We grew in 2024 by 5%. A lot of this was due to our continued ARPA funding and our contract goals, as well as the need that we saw in the community. The reductions that you see here from 2024 and 2025 are entirely attributable to NEST really fully expending its ARPA funds. And so we've been able to learn a lot from this. This hasn't been a loss necessarily in the sense that we're seeing that cliff of our ability to spend those funds and expend those in our communities. What we did do was we invested in innovative programs that we learned a lot from, which will shape our programs for the future, how we can really do things like our neighborhood activation, our business technical assistance, that we want to continue to grow and find other revenue sources to be able to expand those programs. We wish we could have sustain some of the ARPA funding on the activities in perpetuity, but I think we've been able to take a lot of lessons learned, and we'll incorporate that into our work going forward. And I spoke to this a little bit earlier in terms of the collective impact model for 2025, but really the way we see it as, we want to be able to identify some specific NEST neighborhoods that we can prioritize this work and serve as a pilot opportunity. We then want to have dedicated and embedded staff in those neighborhoods to really develop long-term trusting relationships and serve as a liaison both ways. One, between the city, how we are showing up, the different program services and opportunities we offer in that community, and also understanding the needs of that community and bringing that information back to the city. We want to make sure that we're working across city agencies to identify all the different ways that a city is working in, for example, Global Illyria Swansea. How are we, what programs are we delivering? What services do we offer? How are we affecting change in that community? And how do we better communicate and align those services and programming in a way that's going to be more easily received and adopted by the community itself? We then want to look at who else is working in that community, not just the city. There's numbers of partners, investors, philanthropy, and businesses, and we want to be able to kind of create a collective way in which we can all affect change together. And through that and our own investments through CDBG, we hope to create a model that we can then expand to how we do neighborhood community engagement work across the city. So lots of lessons learned through this opportunity, and at the bare minimum, it'll inform our NEST work to be able to enhance how we're doing program delivery, but we hope that this will have an effect across the entire city and how we can do things more from a trusting standpoint versus us bringing services that, you know, don't have that trusting established relationship at its core. Next, I'll highlight really briefly a little bit of the work that's happening with our Division of Small Business Opportunity in DSBO. Obviously, I think a lot of people are familiar with DSBO and how we're really focused on the participation and engagement of certified small, disadvantaged, minority, and women-owned businesses on our city contracts. For 2025, we have our disparity study, which we are currently working through the contractual process with our consultant to complete that disparity study, which will happen this next year. You'll see a little note on that in the budget where we're carrying forward some of those dollars as we're going to be paying essentially half for this year and then the rest of it into 2025. Once that disparity study is completed, we want to make sure that our programs are in alignment with that, so that'll affect the way we develop our strategic planning going forward. And then we also want to look at, are there new ways to bring in more revenue for DISPO? Are there potentially other folks who could benefit from the utilization of the service? And also look at ways in which we can utilize the certified business marker as a way to drive more business for those businesses. So can we promote it like we do our legacy businesses, where we're saying that this is a tool that we can use to showcase that, you know, you are an attractive business for folks to be able to utilize in the projects. And we think about folks who maybe are quasi-governmental, like our hospitals or our academic institutions, who maybe want to use a similar program but don't have the ability to set something up. I think there's a lot of opportunities there for us to look at, and we'll continue to do that in 2025. As we look at our metrics, I think it's really telling to show that on that red line, which is the percentage of DISPO program requirement achieved, we've been consistently above 100% of those targets for the last few years, and I think that's a credit to Brittany and her team and the work that they're doing. And you can see on the total numbers, you know, over the last 5 years, we've had about $1.62 billion that have gone to our certified businesses through city contracts, which is incredible. And I think that speaks and a testament to the quality of the program, our service delivery. There's always things that we can improve on from a quality and an efficiency standpoint, and those will be areas that we look at across the organization. And I'll speak a little bit more to that when I talk about our executive office, which, again, this is my team, our team here, our marketing communications team, our public affairs team, and as we look at how we are operating, we want to make sure that we're creating operational efficiencies. Our plan, Mike, our new chief of staff, who just started about a month ago, is going to be a great resource for us as we look at developing a new strategic plan that's aligned with our city priorities and will guide the work of DITO for the next 5 years. We're always looking at customer service. That's a big priority for me personally. I want to make sure that we're delivering quality public service to all of our clientele, our contracted partners, our business community, and driving new sources of revenue. In terms of our budget composition, you'll see basically two big chunks where most of our dollars go to, one of which is primarily going to our personnel services, our personnel, and the other one, our services and supplies. I believe our greatest resources are people, and they deliver our programs and services to create an economy for everyone. The largest component of services and supplies that you'll see here is really our pass-through dollars that go to partners and sub-recipients that help us achieve the goals through a variety of our programs. As we look at a historical view of our general fund appropriation and comparing it to the expenditures and revenues in FTE, you can see that the personnel expenses is the main driver to our general fund to support all of CCD in the areas that are not funded, they are funded through our grant activities. So we're right at about $10.3 million in terms of that total number, with about 49 of our on our total expenditures. And so we look at some of the changes. One of the things that we were able to allocate is $1 million for the third year of a contract that we have with Downtown Denver Partnership to fund 16th Street Mall businesses that were impacted by construction. In addition to that, I spoke to earlier the $250,000 for the disparity study that we are carrying over as a timeline for that has seeped into 2025, and those dollars will be delivered upon completion. We do have some reductions in the general fund transfers. Most of this is really affected by allocations through the Denver Construction Careers Program. And so what we find as a great opportunity is our workforce division feels very confident in our ability to leverage other dollars that we have available to supplement some of those reductions. If there was ever a time, as Tony told me earlier this week, if there was ever a time to make these reductions, this is the time to do it because we have those dollars that aren't being fully utilized right now, and we have other sources that can backfill any of the areas that would be affected by some of those reductions. Some of the mitigation strategies that we have, we're always looking at it and finding efficiency. One of the things that I have talked about when I came into the organization was this idea of Kaizen or continuous improvement. How do we continue to be more efficient? How do we continue to reduce our dependence on the general fund? So we're continuing to look for that, and we will do that either way, whether we're in a softening economy or not. And this really is ensuring that we're putting our dollars and resources into core functions. We're always looking at ways to increase efficiencies and then expanding revenue streams. One of the areas that we had a specific focus and call out on was this temporary rent utilities assistance amendment that happened earlier this past year. This really didn't have an effect on our program service delivery. We had a contract that maybe would be $50,000 less than it would have been otherwise, but we were still able to really still deliver on all of our programs and services, just at a slightly reduced scope. This came up earlier this week, and Councilwoman Sawyer, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the one of the areas specifically that we're focused on, as Dottie has the major construction project happening on Colfax with BRT. We have $1.87 million dedicated to support businesses impacted by the city construction in 2025. $1 million of that is coming through our ARPA fund that's currently administered by Mile High United Way. We have another $870,000 that we're allocating specifically towards our biofund program for next year. We currently have an open RFP for that. We've been utilizing Mile High United Way for a number of years, and we feel like there's an opportunity to shift those dollars to another partner, especially as we look at different geographic regions of the city. This dollar amount, $1.87 million, is really only focused on 2025 and the expected impacts in 2025. So we have a breakdown of some of the numbers here in terms of how we got to that number. We've had a couple of projects that we used in history where we've seen how many total businesses are potentially eligible, and then how many of those businesses are having the financial effects that would allow them to qualify for the dollars that are available through the biofund, and then how many of those actually take on the dollars at the end of the day. And that's through both the Central I-70 project as well as what we're seeing on 16th Street. And through that, we've seen about 50% participation in the program from businesses, and we've been able to fund those businesses. And so we've used that as a metric to be able to identify the amount of funding that we need to allocate this year. Not only is Colfax BRT one of the projects we're looking at, but we have a few others. Morrison Road, South Federal Green, and West Colfax, we've done a similar analysis, and we see that the $1.87 million will be enough for about 150 of those businesses that will be affected 2025. And so we feel that we have an appropriate allocation for this in comparison. When we look at the 124 businesses that we've supported along 16th Street, that really was about $1.3 million that we expended for those businesses there. So happy to jump into questions and discuss anything further that folks might want to dive into. And thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the presentation. We have Councilman Cashman in the queue, and then Councilwoman Sawyer right after.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. So this is one of those budget line items I'm hoping there's a good explanation for. Mm-hmm. On page 373, special revenue fund contribution to support youth employment and training programs was cut 83% from $2.1 million to $350,000. Why the change, and are there other partnerships that DITO might be involved in to make up for this?
That's your grant.
This is the special
revenue.
It was a 1 year specific for 2024.
This is the special revenue fund, the youth employment special revenue fund.
What I think is happening here is it's a reduction in the general fund transfer based on the balance in the fund. And so part of that decline that you're seeing is the dollars that are transferred into the fund stay in that fund. And so with the balance in the fund being able to roll from year to year, it looks like a decline from 2024 to 2025, because there were dollars that rolled from 2023 to 2024. And so that full $2 million decline is mostly due to money that had built up essentially in the fund that will continue to roll forward, but still allow DITO with the balance in that fund to continue its program.
Unexpended funds.
Okay,
so it won't be a decline council in actual spending in that area.
It will be their dollars already in that fund that allows to spend the same amount next year.
Services will be maintained.
Correct. It's a maintenance of services just coming from a rollover of funds, not new funds.
There'd be that kind of an explanation.
Otherwise, I knew you'd be throwing something at me across the room, so that would be fair.
I've got bad shoulders, so I probably couldn't hit you. Let's see. The other thing I want to ask about is a little bit more about support for small businesses. You know, no matter what part of the city these businesses are in, they're all facing what residents are facing as far as incredible increases in rent and so on. And while I fully support the focus on Nest Neighborhoods, because you have or would like to open a business on Old South Gaylord, doesn't mean you're living in Washington Park. So how are we supporting businesses outside of Nest?
I'll invite Deborah to come up too and maybe speak to some specifics on it. I'll just say that the vast majority of all the programming that we do in our business, our big team, is geared towards small businesses. I mean, that's really the focus of all of our loan programs. That's the focus of our bio fund. That's the focus of a lot of our technical assistance that we're offering out there. And so, obviously, we'd like to be able to serve everybody in the capacity that we would want, but in terms of how we prioritize our work, where we put our dollars and resources, where we put our grant assistance, where we put our loan assistance funds, those are really all geared towards small businesses across the entire city.
Great. If someone could, I'd love to get a briefing as soon as possible to better understand.
Yeah. We have a number of programs that we can give you exactly how they operate, who qualifies for those programs, and then how those programs are delivered, and we can give you detailed breakdown on those.
Great. And how involved is DITO in the area of stimulating worker-owned businesses?
Worker-owned businesses, this is an area of growth and opportunity for us. Our Nest team is really looking at both employment-owned as well as co-ops within specifically our CDBG dollars and our Nest neighborhoods. I personally believe this is an opportunity for us to explore further. I had the opportunity to sit down with Moa Haile, who recently converted his company into an employee-owned business, and I think it's a great example and a testament to the power of those organizations, and so I want to continue exploring that. We have some programming around it, but again, if there's opportunity to us for to be an organizer, to be a networker, to be bringing additional dollars from the philanthropic or other sectors towards that work, that's an area of, I see us spending more time in 2025 than we have in the past.
And then to go back to my first question on those dollars, this is a follow-up.
It's okay.
A
follow-up. Subset. Okay.
On the youth employment training programs, if you could do a one-pager on what y'all are doing in that area, that would be great.
Yeah, happy to do that and share some more detailed work, and we can bring that to you. I'd be happy to do here's an example of the programs that we do have currently operating in that area, as well as the six contracted partners that we work with to deliver additional programming. A lot of it is in partnership with Denver Public Schools and an expansion of that summer workforce programs that we have offered, but would be happy to give you
a little bit more depth would be great. Thank you. Thank you for flexibility.
Absolutely.
Madam Chair, you rule.
Thank you.
Rule.
Did you see your face?
Barely.
Councilwoman Sawyer, and then I have Councilwoman Ivy Dress.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So two things to start out. Number one, I want to give a huge shout out to Seneca and his team, especially Roger Cobb, for all of your help in Windsor. That has been really a great partnership, and I'm looking forward to working with you guys a little bit more on what comes next there. Second, I think it is clear in DITO more than anywhere else why you do not use one-time funds for ongoing programs. The reductions that you all are taking as the end of ARPA comes to a close, it's sad because there is no money for TRUA or other housing supports without our small businesses generating those tax dollars in their sales, which makes you the single most important agency we have when it comes to what our general fund looks like. So to see these kinds of reductions is incredibly disturbing and frustrating. I voted no on lots of ARPA things that came through because they were programmatic and we're going to need sustainable funding, and here we are, and that stinks. So I want to acknowledge that. Questions for you about BioFund. So I have an email here from your staff that says, at a 50% take rate in 2025 alone, on Colfax alone, program funds needed $1.927 million. So $1.87 million is not the same number. First question for you, what is the admin fee cost on the Mile High United Way contract?
5%.
5%, okay. So we're losing 5% there. What is the admin cost on the $870,000?
5%.
Okay, so we're losing 5% there. So when you say that you are comfortable that we are putting enough support towards our small businesses that are being impacted, and we are looking at $1.87 million, but really it's not $1.87 million because of the 5% fees that come off the top, and then I have an email right here that says that $1.87 million wasn't enough to start with. How are we going to ensure that our small businesses across the city, not just on Colfax, are getting the actual support that they need based on the numbers I've received from your team, which are not the numbers we're looking at here?
Yeah, I can't speak to those numbers. What I can say is that we look at the number of businesses that we see that will be affected by construction in 2025, and that's a moving number. I don't think we can accurately say today how many exact number of folks will be affected by it. And then the number of those that potentially would fit within the parameters of the BioFund grant program. That gets us to a number that you see here in this and college of eligible businesses.
Yeah, I appreciate that, but that's the number that your staff sent me to.
How many?
120 businesses on Colfax, $1.927
million. I don't know where that number was derived from. I can't speak to it. What I can say is after taking...
Can any of your staff who are here?
Sure.
Is where that number came from?
Me too. I think the point I'll make, though, to that is as we look at the numbers of folks that we plan to spend grants on, if we look at a comparison for 16th Street, because I think we have to base our programming for 2025 based on the precedents that we have, 16th Street and Central I-70 are our best examples. So we look at 16th Street, the average grant size with the amount we spent, about $1.3 million for 124 businesses, that average grant size was $10,500 at the end of the day that was delivered. And so as we look towards what we're planning on expending for these 150 businesses, it's actually closer to $11,300 in the expected grant size.
Yeah.
So that size equates to it. These are the most accurate numbers that I can provide to you on the number of folks that we expect to be affected and the number of dollars that we'll be able to distribute. And then I think too, as I share the same goals that you do. It's way easier to retain a business than it is to try and recruit somebody into a vacant spot. You know, and I hear about it from businesses that are struggling on 16th Street every day. About difficulties that they've had, some of whom who really appreciate the support we've been able to offer through the BioFund, and other organizations who continue to need help and assistance. And I think as we continue to monitor that situation, we understand the folks that are going to be impacted by the construction. We continue to have those conversations. We see how many folks we get in terms of an application. We can continue to have conversations with DOF and find opportunities to supplement that funding if it's required. But I think for us, we have to project what we think is going to happen in 2025, and these are the best numbers that I can offer you for what we anticipate based on the conversations we've had with Dottie, the scan that Deborah and her team have done of all the businesses up and down the corridor, and where we see the construction impacts, and then our historic precedent on those that utilize the funds with our past two projects.
Okay, I appreciate that. So two follow-up questions for you, and Deb, I know you're getting ready to speak, so sorry. Two follow-up questions for that. So the program on 16th Street Mall, the BioFund program on 16th Street Mall, $17,000 per business. It was $2,000 in setup costs to get businesses up and running with things like their websites, online sales, you know, social media presence, newsletter outreach, etc. And then 15,000 of actual assistance when during the time that they were affected. So how is the average grant size 10,500 when...
Depends on the business size. Not all businesses qualify for 15,000. The smaller businesses within that qualify for $7,500. So there's different amounts based on your business size that you qualify for.
Can I ask a follow-up question on that then? Because it seems to me that the smaller business would actually need more support. So why would the larger businesses be getting the larger amount of money and smaller businesses be getting the smaller amount of money?
Larger businesses above a certain threshold actually do not
get any, right? They have to be under 5 million.
We feel like are in that shape, but it's based on how much of a financial hit are you taking as a result of construction that you have to demonstrate through the program itself. And when we look at the amount that bigger businesses are suffering, these aren't big businesses;
right.
They're still small.
These are all little small businesses, right?
Who need more for larger lease sizes, more payroll, more expenses in general, and running a larger business. And those, I would say, more micro-sized businesses that maybe don't have the same percentage of, or they have a similar percentage of financial hit, but it translates closer to the amount that we're offering with the $7,500.
Okay, appreciate that. Deb, do you mind answering just where this number that I am looking at came from?
I can't tell you specifically where it came from, but what I will encourage you to realize is, and we'd love to sit down specifically with you and show you our data, which we do have to revise, and we do revise it on a quarterly basis.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I will say I asked for this information in committee a month ago, and no one sat down with me to walk through this, which is why I'm asking so many questions right now, and thank you for your patience with this.
Yes, can we get her the information that she needs, please?
Yeah,
I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, happy to sit down with you on it and talk it through.
Yeah.
Also,
okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that would be great. And I will say, I would also like to know, and have never been able to, have never received this information from DITO, how do you make a determination, other than looking at the Central 70 project and the 16th Street Mall project, how do you make the determination of how many businesses are going to be in your take rate, right? Because on Colfax, there are more businesses in more need than there are in some other places. So I think your take rate is also low here, which is also a problem because we've established that this program is already underfunded. And I think your take rate is low. So how have you been having conversations with the businesses? There are three amazing business improvement districts along Colfax. Have they given you estimates of the number of their businesses that are going to be joining? Because they're almost 100% from the conversations I've had with them.
Can you answer that quickly so we can get the folks in the queue?
Yes. So our take rate is generally established by historical program information. So, you know, what we experienced with the Central 70 project, 16th Street, but we also have talked with communities around the country that have run these types of programs and also gained knowledge and intelligence from the way they have done it and what they typically experience as well.
Okay. It concerns me that your answer is we've talked to businesses around the country, not we've talked to the business owners on Colfax. So I'm sorry, we're out of time.
Absolutely.
Yes, I'd love to sit down and talk to you more about this.
That would be excellent, and I'd love to get that information.
Thanks.
As well.
Yeah.
All right, we have Councilwoman Alvidres and then Councilman Watson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Adib, for the info and for breaking it down. I would say, I also want to express concern about the ARPA funds and not having NEST fully funded. I think their data-based approach is amazing. And I'm really worried about all the small businesses in our city. And I don't think the bio fund is for the whole city. That's for Colfax or for other projects. And so I would ask, outside of the bio fund and outside of the 16th Street Mall, what is being done for the small businesses around the city?
Sure. I'm going to have Deborah speak up on a little bit of more detail. This also relates to Councilman Cashman's questions as well of the different programs that we offer, and we can dive into that. But I will just say in overview, all of the business support programs that we offer are geared towards small businesses, and so I'll let Deborah speak to some of those.
Now, obviously, I won't have time to address all of them, but I'll just mention a few that we...
I mean, I don't... I just would like to see the dollars, and maybe that is a follow-up then going over. I know there's a lot of people in the queue, so let's hold off on that.
Sure.
Just because I don't want to, you know, take up too much time on that.
I do want to leave you with is we do have over 30 small business loans out in the community for over $11 million. So, and these are to small businesses in every neighborhood, almost every neighborhood in the city have been impacted by our small business loan program. We have our enterprise zone program. We have our business investment, which is a tax credit program that anybody, that any business in Denver that meets the qualifications can apply for and receive that.
What was that last one?
It's the business investment program. So if they're expanding or making any investment into their business, they can receive a tax credit on the general fund portion of their investment.
Okay. I will say a loan is not really that much help. And when I look at this map and you tell me about how we're giving these corporations like Pepsi huge tax incentives and we're giving small businesses a loan, it doesn't add up to me. But I would like to just follow up with one question, which is obviously our whole budget is suffering because our sales tax is down. So what is the plan to improve our sales tax revenue?
Well, I think a lot of our work is really stressing the economic revitalization of downtown, and that's for good reason, because downtown historically has represented 12 to 13% of our revenue from sales and use tax. And that number is down to about 8.5% now, which represents about a $30 million difference at the end of the year in terms of what we're able to generate from a revenue standpoint. And so that is probably one of our biggest hits from our overall economic impact, and that has a cascading effect around the city. So the reason why we do have a stress around downtown is not just because, you know, it's the stuff we see every day, it's because at the end of the day, when we're trying to drive more sales and use tax to the city, that's an economic imperative for us to put some more time and energy and resources behind it. In addition to that, I mean, everything we're trying to do is around encouraging that our businesses are able to withstand some of the pressures that we're seeing right now from the economy. And on top of that, making it easier to do business with the city itself, so we encourage more investment into Denver. I hear all the time from folks outside of the city or in the city about, are you going to invest in Denver? Are you going to, I'm talking to banks, I'm talking to developers, I'm talking to small businesses, and there's a lot of reasons why we're seeing some of the businesses that have left Denver. And we're trying to address those by making it easier to do business with the city, by working with our departments like Dottie and CPD to make it more customer service oriented, more friendly, more timely, by making our efficiencies easier. And then on top of that, we need to bring in additional dollars. You know, our dollars are limited at the city. We will always have a finite amount of resources. And right now, from an economic standpoint, the need has probably never been greater since I've been in the city for the last 18 years in terms of encouraging and supporting businesses. And so we need to leverage our dollars with other sources. And that's something that I really hope to bring in partnership with our team on the executive level. This is an issue that's affecting you know, our entire economy. So how can we bring in more philanthropic dollars? How can we encourage more private investment? How can we bring in more federal and state grants? I had a conversation just this last week. Mike and I went over to OEdit, and historically, OEdit has not necessarily been a huge investor at the state level from economic development into Denver, because Denver has had a pretty reliable and self-sustaining economy. But they understand now that the need for Denver is great, because as Denver goes, the rest of the state goes. And so also looking at the state in terms of encouraging partnerships. So as you look at our priorities, downtown plays a big role in it, continuing to expand and promote our small business programs that are going to make it easy for folks to do business in Denver, and then bringing in more money. At the end of the day, more money, leveraging our dollars with CDFIs. CDFIs have pots of money, $10, $20 million that we can use in low interest loans. And I know loans aren't a great tool for everybody, but they can be an effective tool for a number of small businesses. So if we can use our dollars, leverage them with other dollars, maximize those with dollars from things like CDFIs or philanthropic organizations, we can hopefully get the most investment possible into sustaining and supporting small businesses.
I appreciate that. I was just going to say, oh shoot, you cut me off and now I forgot what I was going to say. Never mind. Go ahead.
Thank you, Committee Chair. We all think acronyms are sexy, so break down CDFIs before I go into my question.
Community Development Financial Institutions. They are specific.
Let me explain it. That's good. I want to first start and say thank you to Dito. Over 500,000 in bio funds went to small businesses in District 9. I appreciate that support and that focus on small businesses. However, I want to be clear, historic Five Points neighborhood on the east side is the cultural home of the Black community. Gentrification displacement has diluted the economic force of this community. We are not a nest community because we've been gentrified. So most of those NEST dollars don't come to us. My one question is, can you please share, and don't share, send me this information because we don't have time for your response, but I wanted to put it on the record. Can you please share specifically what DITO's investment will be in the Welton Street corridor?
Sure.
Specific to the corridor, discuss how the Neighborhood Activation Program, any of the remaining bio funds, community grant, mini grant programs, and other levers will be used to make sure that that corridor won't continue to deteriorate. All the great work that's being done by the community and the bid is to a point. The partnership with DITO and very specific long-term, not just one-time grants are necessary. I look forward to working with you on that. I look forward to working with Deborah and her team with specifics on how we're going to keep high points strong. You can respond quickly.
I'll just touch it for a minute. I've had multiple conversations, including an hour on Wednesday with Norm Harris, who's now the leader of the bid, to talk about specific projects. Deborah and her team have actually been working directly with Welton Street Cafe, which is a part of the cultural fabric and of the business community on the bid, to help provide some financial relief as they're going through some more difficult times. I'm providing advice and consultation on maximizing the impact of the bid to Norm, and we're going to be looking at ways and bringing more revenue into that specific community. I've also had conversations with Hope Communities,
yeah,
and specifically the building that they have there. They have some loans with DITO that we're looking at creating some more flexibility around. Also connected them with Host on opportunities to preserve some of the affordable housing in that specific building. I'm personally very passionate about that community, and with a former employee at Mile High United Way who really worked to activate Sunny Lawson Park and opportunities in that community to create more vibrancy and activation. So we'll continue to do that into 2025, and I'm excited about the opportunities that exist there.
Look forward to working with you. Thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you so much, Councilman Watson. Councilwoman Torres.
Thank you. Thank you, Adib, and to your team. It's been a real pleasure to be able to work with particularly the NEST team, who has so many touch points into West Denver. But I do want to talk about the DASP program and kind of the future of where DITO sits when it comes to workforce and economic development with the immigrant and refugee populations. And while I know that maybe your portfolio will be changing in 2025 as it relates to newcomers, the many hundreds, if not thousands, of new immigrant residents that have remained in Denver become a population that we then now have to pivot to towards integration. And so there are a couple things that I think situate really nicely in economic development, and that is maybe working with employers on hiring non-English speaking or learning English speaking populations, as well as startup entrepreneurship for immigrant communities. Like, these are things that Denver already needed. I feel like there is this kind of this additional, maybe more urgent need for economic development to be at the table as we develop a new integration kind of protocol for Denver in the coming years. So that's my only question.
Yeah, I'll speak to it. I'll allow Tony to offer his comments as well. I mean, I think this is a tremendous opportunity for our economy. I think as we look at specific sectors and areas where we have labor shortages, there's an opportunity for that newcomer population to really fill some of those needs. What we haven't done maybe historically, I think, as effectively as we could have, is creating that pipeline for those individuals to feel welcome, to feel like they're part of that system, and then acquire any of the training necessary, and then also have the connections with the employers on the back end to be able to get them into the jobs. What I think has been a tremendous success with the newcomer program is the attention it's received, because what we consistently hear from employers is that they want to hire our newcomers. And what we need to do a better job of is making that connection and offering the training and support for both parties. And we feel like that's going to be the continuation of the program that will carry forward into 2025. While we maybe can't do the level of intense programming we've done this last year, we do feel like we can help folks obtain work permits, help folks to get training and connections to employers, and increase that pipeline into some of those jobs where we have shortages. But Tony.
Hi, everyone. Tony Anderson. I get to be Chief Workforce Development Officer for Denver Economic Development and Opportunity. Thank you for the question, and happy Workforce Development Month. If you don't know, September is Workforce Development Month, so I'd be remiss if I didn't wish you a happy one. Love the question, and as you heard Adib mention, our priority populations within the division, specifically Workforce Development, newcomers is in there, right? And we have felt kind of years leading up to the last one well prepared to serve our immigrants and refugees and folks who had legal work status. And to do that better, we have dedicated staff. So we launched a New Americans Integrated Integration Network, where we have a dedicated staff, Maria Elena Rivera, to be that single point of contact for workforce for newcomers. Work Ready and DASP has allowed us to move into how we can actually assist folks who are on that path to legal work status, but who are not yet there. As of this morning, we have 308 individuals who are actively engaged in Work Ready. They're moving into their industry-specific training. Over a third of those folks are interested in construction careers, where we're partnering with Colorado Building Trades Association. So to Adib's point, not often do you get a chance to just introduce hundreds of new folks to the workforce, and we need to take advantage of that, and we're doing that now through dollars working in partnership with El Centro, and we'll continue to do that by investing our dollars into organizations that are serving that, and we'll continue to have dedicated staff for this population until we don't need to, which I don't see that anytime soon.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Councilmember Parity.
Yes, I'm hoping that I stopped reading an email, and I'm now aware that Council President Torres asked my question, so you can tell me if that happened. I'm curious about Work Ready. Was that what you were just talking about?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then I'm not going to ask that. Turn my brain on. Glad you asked. I knew. I thought, you know what? I think I just heard Torres.
After test.
Sorry, guys. You can tell at the end of the week. All right. Let me find my second question. I know I have another really good one. Sorry. Created so much anticipation here. Yeah, so here's the other question that I have about our various funds for small businesses and the BIOs. I'm really appreciative of those funds, just like everyone else, because every single one of us just hears how hard it is out there for a small business, and I know you hear it even more than we do. One of the things I'd like to talk about in the future is starting to move, make sure that we're using that funding in a way that also kind of helps them keep on top of shifts like, you know, electrification, bike parking and storage, so they can use the, you know, BRT line. In other words, trying to like move them towards where we're going anyway with our building codes and things like that. And I had submitted a question through our micro priorities process about supporting small businesses with ADA modifications, and I wanted to lift that up because the response that came back was that, you know, the ADA has been in place for 30 years and so businesses are compliant with it. That's not true. I know this as a small business owner. Many, many, many small businesses are not ADA compliant, which is a huge issue for the disability community, and it's because of cost. You know, my law firm ended up moving spaces because we literally do disability rights work. We were renting in a building that it turned out was not compliant. We learned that. We tried to fund the improvements that would be needed. They were too expensive, and so we moved to somewhere that was ADA compliant. And so that's a kind of an item where if we're thinking about giving small businesses a shot in the arm, we could sometimes do it in ways that track other goals that we have in the city. So I just wanted to kind of raise that up. I don't know that that's really a question. I think I probably just gave a speech. Excited to go back and hear what's happening with Work Ready. And I'll leave it there for today. Thank you so much.
The benefit of the Friday slot.
But I'm glad I got that off my chest.
Great. Thank you so much. I'll send you my questions. Do you have any closing thoughts here?
No, just obviously really thank you for all the work that you have done. We know that you all hold a great deal of top priorities across the city in the years ahead, both the reopening of downtown, workforce across the city, supporting affected businesses, and grateful for your work there. I think it was just helpful to restate what you stated around the efforts on the mall and downtown, which is talk about roughly a $30 to $40 million sales tax revenue drop from downtown over the last 2 years alone. The ability to restore that is the difference in the fund balance we're talking about right now in 2025. And fund balance was designed for economic downturns and reductions in revenue. That is what we're managing for. But the better question has been, how do we get out of this scenario long term? And it is driving increased economic activity. That is a key place to start, even though it is not one of many places, it is a key place to start. But so thanks for your real work there, and thanks for the presentation.
And I just want to acknowledge Brenda Ritchie, who's been our CFO today's actually her last day getting us through this budget process. She has been recruited and pulled into being the CFO and COO over at E470. But I just want to say thank you so much for all the work that you've done for the city and for your work on this budget process.